The history of television is a history of failure.
For every television series that lasted years and years, there were dozens that lasted only one season or less.
But did they deserve to die? Or were they canceled too soon?
Kind of doing, and I realize I'm doing a bit more. I'm actually doing a Mark Hamill's Joker laugh.
A little bit.
I think I'm a little bit more influenced by his Joker laugh than I am by the Crypt Keeper's laugh. But anyway, welcome back to Cancel Too Soon. This is the podcast where we review TV shows that lasted only one season or less. My name is William Bibbiani. I am a critic. And Whitney is not talking for some reason.
Well, usually you say that everybody calls you Bibbs. I was waiting for you to say that part.
The one time I mix it up, I get shit for it.
My name is Bibbs. My name is Whitney Seibold. I, too, am a film critic, and everybody calls me Bibbs.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
And, yeah, it's Scarytober here at Cancel Too Soon. We try to put a lot of emphasis on failed horror television series of bygone eras. This week on Cancel Too Soon, which actually might be the same week as the last one, because Whitney is going out of town and we're pre-recording these, and we might try to squeeze them together. So
double them up. Give you what you've been waiting for.
Yeah. People like Scarytober, or so I'm told. but if not, please let us know. Yeah, we're talking about a failed television series. It was a pilot episode for a series very, 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 very loosely based on the Oscar-winning horror film The Omen. This is 1995's The Omen. Very loosely based.
Well, The Omen started its life as a novel.
Yes.
It was one of those hit potboilers. And I think the novel came out in...
Well, it was just like the
early 70s. It was contemporary to the movie, which came out in 76. And the movie was a big hit. It's considered a horror classic. It doesn't have quite the same class as something like The Exorcist, but it's often mentioned next to The Exorcist because they both deal with sort of demonic themes.
I am seeing no mention of a novel here.
Yeah.
In the history of The Omen.
There's a novel.
Okay. I'm not seeing it. There's only one credited writer, and it's only for the screenplay.
Okay, well,
there's no mention of it on the Wikipedia page.
There were five Omen books.
Okay, I don't trust you when you say that. Now,
yeah, there's.
I'm sure there was a novelization.
Maybe so. There was also a fifth Omen story. Because there were four feature films in sort of like the original continuity. There was The Omen, there was Damien : The Omen 2.
Yeah.
There was The Final Conflict, which was later re-released as Omen 3, The Final Conflict. And then years later, like in the early 90s, they came out with Omen 4, The Awakening.
Yeah, and then they finally did a remake in 2006.
Okay. But in the novels, there was the fourth novel was called Armageddon 2000, where it was going to be, you know, about the Armageddon in the year 2000. And then there was an Omen 5, The Abomination.
Wow. So the premise of The Omen, the original series, is that Gregory Peck in the movie, he's a dignitary or like a...
He's a
diplomat of some kind?
Yeah, he's an international ambassador.
Big muckety-muck. And he has a son. And what he doesn't realize is that his son has been replaced with the Antichrist.
And it mostly focuses on a lot of the Antichrist stuff. But at the beginning of the movie, they're played by Gregory Peck and Lee Remick. And you can tell that they're older. They haven't had a child. So it's kind of important to them that they fill out their family unit. And so when they finally do have a child and it turns out to be possibly the Antichrist, that it's sort of like, it's not just about, you know, this sort of supernatural thriller, it interrupts their family dynamic.
Well, it's also, then can they accept the possibility that their child, the thing that the entity on this planet that they love more than anything else in the world, that they would give their lives for, is pure concentrated evil, and could they do what is necessary to save the world from what they think is their own offspring?
And this young child, who, you know, it's a young child, doesn't have anything to say, but people continue to die around this child. Anybody who threatens Damien dies mysteriously.
In increasingly suspicious and elaborate ways. And the child in the Omen is very little kid. And that's something that's very subversive. That's something, this evil would happen around a very small child. And of course, this is shortly after The Exorcist came out. This is basically considered a big Exorcist knockoff, but it was popular in its own right, and it made a ton of money. It won an Academy Award for its original score, directed by Richard Donner. This shot Richard Donner from making a lot of well-respected television to making blockbuster movies, and this led to him directing Superman, and it was a big, 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 big film. The sequels are a weird mixed bag. The first sequel is fine. It's just Damien's older now, and he's starting to become more aware of his role as the Antichrist.
He figures out that he is, in fact, the Antichrist, and he doesn't like that. And I think that's an interesting drama.
I actually like Damien the Omen 2 quite a bit. I think it's not as good as the original, but it's solid. It's a perfectly good... It makes sense. It's a logical sequel. I haven't seen...
The final conflict, we get to see Damien as an adult.
I don't know if I've never seen it or if I haven't seen it since I was a kid. I know I've seen part of it. I can't remember if I watched the whole thing as a kid and it's just my memory is vague. But Damien is now a politician played by Sam Neill.
And he's going to bring about the end of the world through political means.
And Sam Neill was not a big star yet. This is actually one of his breakout roles.
Does battle with Jesus.
Oh my God. Okay, like, now I don't remember this movie.
Like, it's not like a boxing match or anything.
I wish it was. Can you imagine?
Like some guy who looks like the paintings of Jesus Christ just puts on the boxing gloves and starts going at it. He's like sort of doing magical combat with the goodness of Christ. And he gets to shout things like, "Come at me, Nazarene!" It's pretty absurd, that third movie. And the fourth one is even stupider.
Well, this one was actually a TV movie, and it's about a little girl...
Like, it's Satan kind of whiffed it with Damien, so
he's
got to
try to have
again.
A new kid real fast, and so he has a little girl, and but here the idea is that she may have, like, absorbed the Antichrist in the womb.
Into her own womb, like her own infant womb.
It's so fucking weird and gross.
It's like, I've described it as a Satan turducken before. It's
it's a horrible way to put that. Jesus Christ.
But yeah, that's what was going on. There was and it turns out the fetus gave birth to another fetus while
it's
in the womb.
It's really
repugnant.
So the
mother is going to have another baby and that's the Antichrist?
It's really repugnant, the concept and how far they develop it. It does not work at all. I've actually never seen the remake with Julia Stiles and I think Peter Sarsgaard plays the dad in that one.
That sounds right. I have seen it. I don't remember it.
Well, that speaks very highly of it, doesn't it?
I have a terrible memory, but...
Fair enough. You actually have a better memory than you think, but...
It was Liev Schreiber.
It was Liev Schreiber, the other Peter Sarsgaard. Omen 4, The Awakening was in 1991, and obviously it didn't lead to a big rejuvenation of the franchise, and they decided to do a television series. Although the plot of the TV series The Omen has almost nothing to do with The Omen, they were considered directly connected. They were like part of an attempt to expand upon the mythology of the show, of the original.
Which doesn't make any sense because this TV pilot has as much to do with The Omen as Friday the 13th, the series has to do with the Jason Voorhees movie series.
You can tell that somewhere down the middle there was something to do with something, but it didn't end up working.
This is not so much The Omen as it is The Exorcist.
A lot more in common with
More accurately, it's more like the movie Fallen, which is about a demonic angel, a fallen angel, who can possess people just by touching them and can pass from person to person via touch. So anybody could be the monster at any given moment.
Yeah, Fallen kicks ass.
Fallen's a very good movie.
The Omen 1995, a bit more of a mixed bag, but just to cement the connection in case you're wondering, Richard Donner was an executive producer of this.
He was asked to be, but I think he dropped out.
Well, regardless, he was connected to it for a while. The idea was that it was supposed to be connected, but it really wasn't. This was directed by Jack Shoulder, who has also done a great movie about a body-hopping monster called The Hidden. Mm. The Hidden stars Kyle MacLachlan. I think, is it Michael Norrie in The Hidden? Yes, yes it is. Oh, it's Michael Norrie. He plays. So the idea is there is an alien that is on Earth that can jump from body to body, and it's just
it's like this little bug thing that can crawl into people's bodies.
And it's like
right?
on this weird wild joyride where we'll jump into someone's body and then commit horrible crimes and steal fast cars and whatever like that, and it's just on a spree, and nothing can stop it. Except for Michael Norrie, who's a tough cop, and his new partner, Kyle MacLachlan, who is an alien from space.
Possessed by a cop alien.
Yeah, and The Hidden rules.
It's a pretty fun movie.
The Hidden kicks ass. The Hidden's a very good film. Jack Shoulder has directed...
He also did A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, which is also about that movie. They kind of changed Freddy a little bit in that he's trying to use the protagonist's body to sort of infiltrate the real world again.
Yeah. So he's done a lot of possession movies. Mm-hmm. And for the record, A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge, actually a very, very good film. Okay. At least that's my opinion.
There's a lot of really interesting stuff in it. I think it's kind of clumsy because the mythology doesn't make sense even under its own terms.
But
it's not that they changed the original so much as they didn't think out what they wanted this new thing to be.
But I'm fine with that, though. And actually, what I really like about Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge, is that it's the only film in the Nightmare on Elm Street series where Freddy invades someone's mind in order to take advantage of their fears and their dreams, and the fears aren't superficial shit like I'm afraid of boiler rooms and knives, or I'm afraid of
I hate bugs, so now I'm being turned into a cockroach.
Yeah, those are fine, but those are very superficial things. He invades the mind of a young man who is clearly wrestling with his sexual identity and is dealing with a lot of sexual confusion and shame, and Freddy exploits just that one guy.
Yeah.
In a lot of insidious ways. And as a result, to me, that movie is, in some respects, the scariest of the series because he's really getting in his head.
It's about one person's anxiety. Yeah. It's not about a bunch of kids.
And I actually really like that movie a lot for that reason and a variety of others, but I understand why some people have trouble with it.
There's a really wonderful documentary film about it called Scream Queen on Shudder.
Yeah, which is all about the film's incredible... downright overpowering gay subtext.
Yeah,
in that movie, yeah.
And the actor himself was gay and was wrestling with that at the time. Mm-hmm. And
he got typecasted by the movie, and it hurt his career.
It hurt his career. He eventually sort of came around to it, but ended up overall kind of resenting the movie. It wasn't until decades later when he was at cons and stuff that he realized it ultimately had a positive impact on his life, but it took a long time.
And he had a lot of resentments towards Jack Shoulder, who he felt kind of manipulated him into making a movie that wasn't quite what he signed on for. It wasn't how he wanted his image to be presented.
And in that documentary, he gets to talk to Jack Shoulder, and it does not go well.
No.
Jack Shoulder didn't...
I lost some
really
respect for
hear
Jack
what
Shoulder
he was
that
saying.
Day.
Yeah,
yeah, he's made some good movies, and I like those movies, but I lost some respect for Jack Shoulder that day. But in any case, Jack Shoulder directed The Omen 1995, and the premise of The Omen 1995 is actually pretty good cast. We've got...
First of all, there's William Sadler.
Yeah, wonderful character.
And I love William Sadler.
This is around the time he was doing Demon Knight, another demonic possession type movie.
Yeah, William Sadler was the Demon Knight in the movie Demon Knight. He was in The Shawshank Redemption. He was in the movie Freaked. You'd recognize him. He has a wonderful, smarmy smile.
A lot of kids my age, if you know him, might know him as... I think he was the... the really intelligent custodian from the movie Disturbing Behavior.
That's right.
Yeah. Not a great movie, but he managed to make the most out of his role. Mm. So he plays an epidemiologist, studying viruses and things. He teams up with a photojournalist played by Brett Cullen, who is probably best known now for playing Batman's dad in Joker. Thomas Wayne. But another guy with a very, very long career. He's an investigative journalist, and they are both investigating the events surrounding a disused military missile silo in somewhere America. It's been locked for many, many years, but as the guy who is responsible for keeping the fencing up has noted... It's been locked from the inside for many, many years, it's locked from the outside for many, many years, but something keeps hitting the door, which is admittedly kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And
good haunted house stuff.
William Sadler goes to investigate, and he finds hanging over, this big giant hole where they would put, a missile in and it would fire. Hanging over this hole is a corpse hung by its neck that is still alive and moving. which is also pretty fucked up.
And it's been like disfigured in some way, like disease has racked its body. Yeah. So it's like really kind of weird looking as well.
And that's when it screams and like this weird, terrible 1995 TV CGI stuff comes out of its mouth.
It's like the water tentacle in The Abyss, but it's like,
not as good.
Ripley moving effect. It doesn't look great.
It is what it is. William Sadler, this amuses me, dodges it.
He ducks aside.
And it ends up hitting the guy who was repairing the fence. And that guy just, it steals William Sadler's car and just drives off into the ether.
You know, because we've seen the X-Files, we know exactly what's happening immediately. A demonic thing came out of the corpse and now has possessed this guy. And it's going to go out and wreak havoc.
And the demon ends up in, it's Boston, right?
It's in Boston. Yeah. And it's in the sister of one of the main characters.
Well, it ends up there. They're not related.
No, they're sisters. Chelsea Field and the possessed woman in the bed? They're sisters.
Oh, sorry, they are. Sorry, yeah. I'm sorry. I thought you were saying. There's
like a lot of dialogue
to that effect. You skipped ahead a minute. I thought you were talking about a different character. I was confused. So like the guy gets in a car. The guy just hits a random woman in a car. And then he like stops, goes back over to the random woman. Off screen, I guess, knocks out an EMT and puts on his outfit, gets in a car with the other EMT who hasn't noticed that his partner who's in the truck with them this whole time is a different guy now.
And you're busy. You can't notice things like that.
Yeah. And they take he ends up in the back seat with the woman. He like infects her with the demon thing. She ends up in a hospital. It turns out the head nurse at the hospital, played by Chelsea Field, an actor who I really, really like a lot. Yeah,
she was in Masters of the Universe and Death Spa.
Yeah, fun actor. Like her a lot.
She ended up working with and then marrying Scott Bakula.
No shit. Didn't know that. Yeah. Okay, that's fun. Anyway, she ends up trying to save her sister's life. She doesn't, and the demon infects her now, and now she's trapped in a hospital, and William Sadler and Blackjack Savage is in this, right? It's Stephen Williams.
Stephen Williams,
the great Stephen Williams,
long working actor Stephen Williams,
who we know best from the 100 Lives of Blackjack Savage, one of the most fucked up TV shows ever created. They're both trying to figure out the medical marvel that is demonic possession. Meanwhile, Brett Cullen is investigating for his newspaper, and he has, after his wife and child died under mysterious circumstances, he has been trying to investigate the supernatural to figure out what really happened. And so this is his opportunity to do so. And all the main characters are converging on one spot. And there's one more we haven't mentioned, a man named Aaron, played by the great Norman Lloyd. Norman Lloyd, who was like the killer in Alfred Hitchcock's Saboteur. He was in movies from like, I think, like 1930s and 40s up until pretty much when he died. And he died this year.
He was 106.
He was 106 years old. He collaborated with Alfred Hitchcock many times. In fact, here's something that is a total coincidence. The last episode of Cancel Too Soon, we reviewed a film that was produced by Alfred Hitchcock's production company called Dark Intruder. In Dark Intruder, there was a psychic named Malachi who had a really creepy voice. Do you know who provided the creepy voice of Malachi?
Was it really Norman Lloyd?
It was Norman Lloyd. Oh my goodness. We managed to do two failed pilots 30 fucking years, exactly 30 years apart, both of which co-starred Norman Lloyd. Weird.
Norman Lloyd did eventually stop acting, but wouldn't it be great if there was a pilot from this year that he made it age 106?
That would be astounding. It would be the coolest thing ever. But yeah, Norman Lloyd had a long career. Produced shit. He was his last movie was actually a very successful film. He was in Trainwreck, Amy Schumer rom-com that did very, very well. So good for him. What an incredible career.
What a wonderful long career that.
Yeah,
man
and he
had.
Was in that movie when he was about 100. It's really quite astounding. So he plays a guy who has been his whole life hunting demons because demons killed his family.
Well, so what we have here is the demonologist man of action, the Demon Knight, played by the Demon Knight. We have
initially played by Norman Lloyd, but it will be replaced. Norman Lloyd is looking for someone to replace him. Norman Lloyd will not be a regular cast member. He dies in this episode trying to save the world, and he tells Brett Cullen and William Sadler, and then they end up getting Chelsea Field to tag along with them, that they are the new Demon Hunters. We need someone to protect the world from this supernatural monster. Well,
and I was just trying to get to sort of what the ultimate premise was going to be. We have like this team of people who are going to go out and hunt demons.
Yes.
Presumably different demons, but we'll get to that.
I think the idea is that this demon, it's kind of like Supernatural, where they hunt new demons every week, but for like the first five seasons, there was always one demon.
After like one.
Well, there was one demon that killed their mom.
Right.
And it was, I think it was called the Yellow-Eyed Demon, because every time he possessed someone, they had yellow eyes. And so that demon kept coming back, but it's like the one-armed man in The Fugitive. They never quite got him until like towards the end of that initial five-season arc.
Dude, spoilers.
Shut up. The Fugitive. that's actually not what happens in The Fugitive. He actually does get him. In any case, so I feel like there would be different monsters, but this is the one that we'll keep coming back to. The main plot of this episode, though, is once everyone's converged on the hospital and all of these scientists are trying to figure out how demonic possession is biologically possible, which is an interesting idea. How would that work biologically? Because it's affecting your body. But also it turns out the demon isn't there by accident. The demon is there because the hospital is also being used for secret government research into highly infectious diseases, which you really shouldn't be doing at a workaday hospital with an emergency room and shit. And people just wandering around all willy-nilly because security is lax here. And it turns out that they're investigating, which is a very hot button disease in the 90s, a flesh eating virus. This is something that every tabloid was talking about, how the flesh eating virus is coming forward. It's a real thing. But this is like some supercharged flesh eating virus that could like devour the flesh of an entire army in a day. And the demon wants to steal it and then release it in the middle of a St. Patrick's Day parade. Cool. You know, like The Omen.
You're a demon. You can possess people, and you still need to like steal viruses from hospitals. It's pretty. Anyway, the Chelsea Field's sister is possessed. When Chelsea Field goes in to treat her, she dies on the operating table.
Yeah,
and then it goes into Chelsea Field, who falls down comatose, but who can occasionally lurch up and say things in a demon voice.
They talk about how different people are affected by demonic possession differently.
If you don't want to write any rules.
I think there are rules here, and it's basically like if you're an evil person and you welcome the possession, the demon is just like, it's like venom. It's like, yay, we can be in you forever.
Yeah.
However, if you're trying to fight it, it can burn out faster and it usually just kills you. You know, like venom. this fucking movie's Venom. What are we gonna do? So Chelsea Field is trying to fight it, and she's able to burst out of it. There's a really sad bit where she's like in like the basement, and she stopped herself momentarily from stealing this horrible virus, and she's confronted by Brett Cullen, who's like trying to help her. And there's something really, really sad. She says like, I'm a nurse. All I ever wanted to do was help people. Please tell people I didn't want to do this. Because she knows this will be her legacy.
Yeah.
Is the person who doomed the world or whatever. And she doesn't want that to be her. She's fighting this. She's trying not to do it. And I think Chelsea Field really sells it quite well. Like this inherent tragedy to what she's going through. I will say this. I think the whole cast is quite good in this. I think everyone's doing their job, selling this to the best of their abilities. It's a pilot. There's a lot of exposition.
I was going to say that the weak link is actually the Brett Cullen character. I think he's
just kind of generic.
He has a tragic backstory, but it is a generically tragic backstory. Mm-hmm. He's lost his family. He's investigating. Mm-hmm. He only has one friend, and his friend is played by Julie Carmen.
I don't know Julie Carmen.
You might have seen her in The Mouth of Madness. She's had an incredibly long career as well.
That's how I know. That is totally where.
She only shows up in one scene. She's like she was in Gloria and the Milagro Beanfield War.
She was Jerry Dandridge's sister in Fright Night 2.
That's right.
Yeah.
She's been done a lot of genre films and a lot of other films besides.
And
here she is in one scene playing the person who gets to say, "Look, I'm your one friend, and I'm going to give you some exposition before you exit the screen."
It feels like the kind of character they might put on the show in order to have them come back later, but after the pilot, they're going to realize they don't need her. I doubt we'd be seeing much more of her. She might bring her in a few more times, then realize we don't need an editor to put him on assignments. The plot's kind of straightforward. I will say this, it zips along. It's not a boring TV movie slash pilot episode. I think it's something that Jack Shoulder's always been very, very good at is keeping a lot of incident on screen. He's a good genre filmmaker. He knows how to keep things going.
I don't think this was necessarily a need to continue connecting things to the Omen and keep the Omen relevant throughout. I think this was clearly a reaction to the X-Files.
Oh, 1,000,000%. They probably like, oh, what do we have the rights to? We have the Omen? We can turn that into the X-Files kind of thing.
People who investigate Omen stuff, and it's all just demonic. That'll be our angle.
Here's what you do. If you want to turn the Omen into an X-Files show, here's what you do. You go the full Hellstrom route.
Oh, there
the protagonist is Damien, and he's trying not to be a bad guy. And he's actually trying to, like, listen, I know I'm supposed to doom the world, but maybe if I save the world enough, I can balance out the ledger and I can prevent that from happening.
That's the Brimstone route, not the Hellstrom route.
That's kind of Hellstrom. Wasn't Hellstrom, wasn't he, like, Satan's son or whatever?
Satan's son and Satan's daughter were, like, fighting their mom who was possessed by a thing, and there's a lot of kind of convoluted shit in Hellstrom, but
Brimstone was the good version of this, by the way. Brimstone. We did Brimstone and Cancel Too Soon quite a few years ago now, but it's a really, really great show. It starred John Glover as Satan, and there's a prison break in hell, and a whole bunch of demons have escaped onto Earth, and he brings a damned police detective out of hell to wrangle up all of these escaped demons. And it's a really good show.
That's a really good... And John Glover shows up, like, at the end of every episode saying, yes, I'm still Satan.
Yeah,
and he's very, very good.
Yeah. Not a lot of duds in that one. Just a really solid, episodic, supernatural, X-Files kind of series.
The problem with trying to turn The Omen into a TV series is you have to change the premise. The Omen is about discovering who the Antichrist is. Mm-hmm. Unless you're going to make it about Damien.
Yeah.
You can't have sort of like the one revelation that we already know. Of course, I say that, and they already did a TV series of Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see any of that Nurse Ratched TV, so like the
prequel,
The One
that
Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
They're trying
to stretch out these kind of very basic premises that we already know the premise of into something longer.
Well, if you're concerned about the act of revelation, then yes, this would be an exercise in what's the word?
Futility.
Futility. I don't know why I blanked on that. Then this would be an exercise in futility because we already know it. They would already advertise it, etc. But it's all a matter of you come up with the premise for a story, and we tend to think there's only one way to do that if it's been done. That's not true. There's a million ways you could do. How do you do a story about the Antichrist? Mm. Okay, well, you could do The Omen, where it's a story about parents who find out that their child is the Antichrist and are trying to figure out how to deal with that. You could do a story like the 1990s show American Gothic, where it's about a bunch of adults sort of vying for the moral center of this child in order to help them grow up and to become either evil or good. You could do a sitcom where all of our kid is the Antichrist. And, oh, Damien, did you kill the babysitter again, you know, like you do like a really dark thing. I'm not saying it's a great idea, but like there's a million different ways you could do it. You could do it like Dracula the series, where Damien is grown up and he's like the head of a corporation or something, and a whole bunch of people don't know that they're working for the Antichrist. You can make it like Prophet.
Yeah.
Like there's a million different things you could do. You make choices that seem good at the time. Sometimes they're good ideas, sometimes they're not. And this one feels like, man, we had this script or this idea for a body-hopping demon show, and we decided to call it The Omen. It really, you could have connected it somewhere, like maybe this demon, his ultimate goal is to create the Antichrist, and that's like the cliffhanger at the end of season one, where you find out that he's actually been looking for the perfect host in order to sire the Antichrist. You could have done that. But to start somewhere else, if you watch a show called The Omen, and The Omen is still a very famous movie franchise, and it has nothing to do with The Omen, you're going to say to yourself, well, that's a disappointment, even if the show itself is, in a vacuum, kind of fun. This is not a bad program. Well, I actually had fun watching it.
I'm going to make the parallel...
But, it's not The Omen.
I'm going to make the parallel to Friday the 13th, the series again. Yeah. They had the name, but they just couldn't come up with a premise.
Yeah.
They didn't want to do the silly sitcom. That would have been great, by the way. I like your idea.
Thank you.
But it's difficult to extend that, especially in the 90s when they weren't doing like gigantic arc television in the way they're doing today.
Yeah, maybe like a big TV miniseries they would have done, but they wouldn't have. The thing is just it.
So what I'm guessing is they started with the name The Omen, but they said, we're not going to do that. we're going to come up with something else that is demonic. And and we're going to put together like a team of investigators. And I like Friday the 13th, the series, just fine. And that's, I don't resent it at all for differing from the Friday the 13th movies.
No, it's fine.
Would you want to have wanted to have seen a Jason Voorhees TV series where it's just like a different mini slasher movie every week? Maybe that would have worked. Maybe not.
I imagine it being like kind of like Twin Peaks, where it's just everyone trying to live in this town where Jason Voorhees is in the woods.
Yeah.
And everyone's just like, yeah, Jason Voorhees kills a lot of people. I put a fully cooked steak out in my backyard every night, and he has not bothered me. Like, what's it like to live in that town? Like, that would be interesting, you know? What's it like to get those tourists, you know?
Oh, good, there's raccoons in our trash. Kill them and leave them as bait for Jason. He just eats the raccoons.
There's a lot you could do. It's a weird situation to live in a town with that legacy where there's actually an active serial killer in the woods somewhere. No one knows where he is.
Maybe they do that
today. There's a story.
Today.
They wouldn't have done a soap opera version.
They wouldn't have done
that
in the mid-90s when the series came out.
Almost certainly not.
But, you know, the series is about cursed objects and antiques, and it's kind of anthology structured, and there's investigators. Nothing to do with Jason Voorhees. And I like that show. And
it's
like differing from The Omen, the movie, is no big crime. If you're just going to take the name and have this brand new premise with all these new characters, fine. I'm not going to get miffed.
Here's where, and again, I think that we actually recently had a letter on our podcast, We've Got Mail, where they asked, how important is a title? And I think a title can be important because it sets expectation. Not necessarily, but it can. In the case of Friday the 13th, the series, I think it's a little different because Friday the 13th is a general scary concept. It's like calling it the witching hour or something, where it's like, okay, that can kind of be about anything, you know? Tales from the Crypt. As long as there's scary tales in a monstrous way, you can kind of be about anything, right? It doesn't really matter. And they also differentiate it by calling it Friday the 13th, the series. As to clarify, this is not the movies. This is the series. Different thing. Okay. Kind of weird, but okay. The Omen, the series, this failed 1995 pilot, here's where it bugs me the most. It's not that it doesn't directly connect to the movies, because again, there's definitely a way to get back there. Supernatural stuff, there's no reason for the Antichrist not to exist in this universe. You can totally get there. Here's why it pisses me off. At no point in this movie is there an omen. An omen is a symbol or a vision or some other indication of something ominous ahead. It's a bad sign. It's like in the beginning of Apollo 13 when Tom Hanks' wife is played by Kathleen Quinlan. He's going off into space. And then, like, as he's going off into space, she drops her wedding ring down the shower drain. That's an omen. That's a bad sign. Things are not going to go well today.
And even she is, like, a little bit weirded out that it's number 13. You know, unlucky number.
Yeah, it was like there was a lot of, like, there's a lot of bad omens there. And those were all true, you know, but... Yeah, it's weird, right? So when something bad happens, they're like, oh, today is going to suck. Like, we know what that is. That's not what The Omen is about. The Omen doesn't really have omens. The Omen is just about, like, again, I love the idea of confronting demonology from a medical standpoint. That's exciting, actually. What is it like to be physically taken over by a demon, and what does that do to you biologically? Interesting. I like that. That's cool. It's not an omen. It has nothing to do with an omen. Could you at the very least put an omen in your movie? Could it start with an omen? Could Norman Lloyd talk about omens a little bit? Could we just put an omen in here so the title makes some sense?
Did Friday the 13th, the series, always take place on Friday the 13th?
No, but again, my point is Friday the 13th is a general concept. Friday the 13th, the movies, didn't either. Friday the 13th is just a scary idea.
So the omen is a bit more specific. Would you have objected if it was simply called Ominous?
No, that's a great idea.
Okay.
That's a great title.
No, not the omen, not referring to a specific omen, but it is Ominous.
Yeah, Ominous is a great title. Okay. I think they should make a sequel to Malignant called Ominous. Like, it's a good title for a horror thing. Mm-hmm. Call it that. But yeah, The Omen itself just is a little misleading, and I don't think it serves the pilot very well. I think his pilot had been called anything else, probably would have had a better chance, because this is... Listen, we've watched a lot of sci-fi, horror, fantasy TV shows from the 90s.
Yeah.
And we've still barely scratched the surface. But we've watched a lot of failed ones, of popular ones. And this is nowhere near the worst.
Oh no, this is
actually pretty competent.
It's pretty
not
efficient.
A bad pilot, actually.
I think the only issue is its resemblance to the X-Files. You could put Mulder and Scully in this exact story without batting an eye.
This would actually be a very good X-Files episode, and I would think it would be a well-remembered one.
Scully would be bringing up what's happening biologically to somebody who is possessed.
And then
Mulder would say,
Cullen,
no, it's definitely a demon. I saw the snake floating
and
through
Brett
the air.
Brett Cullen like runs down into the basement and he has that conversation that Brett Cullen does. And Norman Lloyd can still be in it. Why not? Like, so you can totally do this.
It's not necessarily that it doesn't connect to the Omen. Mm-hmm. The pilot doesn't do anything wrong. It's just that it's more of the same. It's too derivative of what was already out there. We already had the better version of it. Mm. It's clearly chasing trends.
Yeah.
And that might be the thing that hurt it.
On the other hand, again, as we discussed, The Omen was chasing a trend originally in the first place.
Mm.
The movie was, again, basically trying to capitalize off of the success of The Exorcist, which is the biggest horror movie of all time. And if you adjust for inflation, and you don't count Jurassic Park, which I think you should, it's still the biggest horror movie of all time.
Mm.
So The Omen managed to find its own identity while being derivative. A lot of successful shows start off as derivative and find their own way. Friends, when it first came out, was written off by a lot of people as a pretty good Seinfeld ripoff. Here's a bunch of attractive people in New York hanging out and dating.
Which came first, Friends or Coupling?
I don't remember.
Because I know there was a British TV series that was very, very similar to Friends, but I don't remember which came first.
I don't recall, and I cannot say. Mm. I could look it up, I suppose. But Friends definitely came after Seinfeld, and I remember reading reviews in like TV Guide and the LA Times. They were basically just like, it's pretty good, but it just feels like a Seinfeld ripoff. It probably won't last more than one season.
It lasted 10.
But it found its own voice, or something like Speed.
Mm.
Speed was considered part of the wave of Die Hard knockoffs. And I've mentioned this, and some people have rejected it. It's like, Speed has nothing to do with Die Hard. Sure it is. It's Die Hard on a bus. It is a confined space action movie where a hero has to solve a lot of life or death problems at the mercy of some brilliant criminal who has thought out everything. That's Die Hard. It's also Sudden Death. Mm. It's also like all these other. What are some other Die Hard knockoffs? There's that one with Thomas Ian Cracker Jack, starring Thomas Ian Griffith, which no one has talked about in 20 years.
I haven't even thought about the movie in years.
There was that one that was on a ski resort with Bruce Campbell and I think Sean Astin.
Aspen Extreme?
Was that Aspen Extreme?
Or maybe it was Extreme Ops.
I don't know. One of those. One of those. Damn. Something was extreme and it was bad. But my point is this: Speed found its own identity. Because it managed to take the influence of, okay, we're gonna it's Die Hard on a bus. That's the pitch. We'll make it. But the movie was distinct enough, and they found their own voice, that it became kind of its own thing, and is no longer generally considered to be a knockoff, even though it was originally.
Hmm.
Being a knockoff is not the worst thing in the world to be, so long as once you use that to get made and sort of capitalize and find a bit of an audience, you're also good.
Hmm.
I don't mind that things are derivative. As long as they're good. You know, The X-Files was an updated version of Kolchak.
It was set at the time.
Yeah. It's a good update of Kolchak. Mm. I'm not going to complain too much about it.
Well,
so,
it's different than... It's one thing to take the spirit of something and spin it off and create something kind of new. Like we talked to Joe Dante once about Piranha.
Yeah.
And they had recently made a sequel to Piranha, Piranha 3D. And
it was a remake.
Piranha 3D was sequel-ish, and
if you wanted to call it a sequel, but I think
Piranha,
it was supposed
Piranha
to stand
2,
on
the
its
third
own.
One is called Piranha 3D. I'm counting it as a sequel, just because of the three.
I'll let it go. Fine, but they was basically rebooting the series, basically.
And I think we asked him, "Oh, how do you feel about somebody like remaking your work?" He's like, "I don't care if somebody rips off me. We were ripping off Jaws."
Yeah, very open about it. He knew exactly what he was doing, but they put their own vibe in it. That doesn't feel like Jaws.
Mm.
Watch that first Piranha. First Piranha is a compulsively entertaining movie. Like, you cannot put it down. It's so much fun.
The Omen feels like The X-Files.
It does.
It doesn't feel like its own entity. It's not striking new territory. It's not doing anything new.
Which is frustrating because I feel like it has the DNA of something new, which is, again, a medical show about the supernatural. I feel like that's something that wasn't really done.
Mm.
And it could have focused on that and been something kind of interesting. Like, what if there's only one doctor who can see the signs that all of these mysterious ailments that are popping up are supernatural in origin?
Hmm.
That's an omen. Cool. Done. You've got a show.
Now you have an omen as
well.
And
it stars William Sadler, and Brett Cullen is a local investigative reporter who is also investigating all of these mysterious ailments.
Hmm.
And Chelsea Field is the nurse who works at the hospital. Boom. You got a fucking show. It's cleaner. It's more direct. It's X-Files ish without being the X-Files, and you can call it The Omen. Why the fuck not? And you can build eventually to having the Antichrist in it, and the Antichrist is born at this hospital or something. Mm. Fine. That could be the end of the pilot episode, is that they're at this hospital the whole fucking time, and there's a woman who's going into labor, and then it turns out that, like, but why did all of this happen today? What, surely all of these things can't possibly be a coincidence, and the lady leaves with her child, and the child has, like, red eyes or something. Sure. Really scary. Boom. Good idea for a pilot. Here, not a great pilot, very derivative pilot, but an entertaining pilot. Mm. And I'll say this right now, we got to ask the question, was it canceled too soon? I'm torn. Because although it's derivative, I had fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would like to see at least half a season of this before I made a decision of whether this could find its own voice.
Like,
I wouldn't have to do a full season commitment, but I'll give you half and we'll see how it goes.
I'll say it was canceled too soon. Because it did show some promise. And I like this idea. I like the characters. I like the idea of this kind of intense tone of, you know, supernatural investigations, but more in a demonic bent than the X-Files, which is a little more science fiction-y. Fine. There's promise here. Like you, I would not want to see if this is the kind of show where they're going to go after the same demon every week.
Yeah.
Or if it's going to be more like a monster of the week thing. I think if it's the latter, it would be a stronger show.
I agree. 100%. I think you bring back this demon overall. He's like the mastermind of some evil thing going on. And then end the season with some big giant two-parter or whatever that this demon is part of. Fine. But, that was a storytelling technique that was becoming popular in the late 90s. Buffy the Vampire Slayer helped popularize it. You can do an episodic thing with a narrative through line in a couple of episodes throughout the season.
Mm.
I agree. I think it was canceled too soon, but I'm not in love with it. And I'm not going to do a full season commitment yet, but you have a little bit more time to flesh this thing out and help it find its own identity. In part just because I want to see a horror series starring William Sadler. It's William fucking Sadler. I love William Sadler. Very, very fun actor.
Mm.
Always gives 110%. Totally deserved it. And if you haven't seen Tales from the Crypt Demon Knight, which stars him as a heroic demon hunter fighting off Billy Zane at his Billy Zaniest, that's a great movie.
It's really wonderful.
It's a really, really good film.
We did a commentary for it once upon a time.
But just a wonderful film.
excuse me.
So check it out if you haven't already. Of course, check out Brimstone if you can find it. But that is it for Critically Acclaimed. That is it for Canceled Too Soon. We'll be back next time with... And you know how, like, we spent, like, the last, like, hour, like, 45 minutes or so talking about, like, this failed TV series based on The Omen? Well, it's time to put that aside and do a failed TV series based on The Omen.
Really based on The Omen.
We're going to talk about Damien, a failed TV series based on The Omen from the last 10 years or so. I forgot
it was 2015.
2015. I think it was on Lifetime.
All right. 2014, it was on Lifetime.
Yeah.
And then it moved to A&E.
Yeah.
It was like moving around a lot. So it was kind of doomed from the start.
Trying to find an audience, and it never quite did. But it was a 10-episode series based on The Omen. If you want to follow along, you can watch it on Hulu right now. We will be talking about that next time on Scarytober here at Cancel Too Soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Yes.
We think you're great, and we're incredibly grateful to have you here. A very special shout-out to all of our patrons.
Oh, indeed.
We have to talk about you every single episode of every single show we do, because we would not be here without you. The lights would not be on in this, I call it a studio, it's my living room. The lights would not be on here were it not for you. You're keeping these shows running. You're keeping, you're making it possible to do this. So we're incredibly grateful to you. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. If you want to join in and become a patron of Critically Acclaimed, Cancel Too Soon, and all other shows, you can go to patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. We have a lot of exclusive shows for you over there. To thank you for being a patron. You get to vote for future episodes of our shows. We have a podcast, exclusive Patreon podcast, about Batman, about every single episode of Star Trek, about every single film ever nominated for Best Picture. With Whitney going out of town, that episode might be delayed more than we'd like.
Apologize for that.
We're doing our best.
I am leaving town. I'm going out of on a vacation. But we have some things for you.
Whitney deserves his vacation. while I'm being away. No, Whitney deserves vacation 1,000,000%, and we apologize that it's delayed one of our podcasts. It also means that, like, this week or so, we have fewer podcasts in general going up on the feed, but that will be fixed next week. But in any case, we have a lot of Patreon exclusive stuff. We have a Twitter account. We're at Critic Acclaim. I am at William Bibbiani.
I'm at Whitney Seibold.
If you want to talk about anything we discussed on this show or anything else you'd like us to talk about, questions, concerns, critiques, curiosities, whatever you've got, email us. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. And we also have a snail mail address for people who like to send us snail mail. Some people have been nice and sent us things. We got like a nice shirt from the Salem Horror Fest. That was really nice.
Some nice gifts as well. And so that's incredibly kind.
And other things as well. Books and things.
If you would like to write us a letter, write us in at the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565. Los Angeles, California, 90064.
Yes. Greatly appreciated. Thank you to everybody who's listening. We think you're the best. We hope you have a wonderful week, a safe, sane, but scary Halloween. And that is a wrap. We'll see you next season.